concerns a serial stabber is on the loose.
Look how deserted it is. It's amazing. It's changed for sure.
What authorities are doing about the potentially deadly threat in White Rock. Wildfire season sparks fear in the Peace region.
Yesterday, they were seeing gusts upwards of 50 kilometers an hour in the region.
Today, improving conditions with evacuated residents near Chetwynd allowed back home. And Vancouver wrestles with its rioting reputation.
We're not just going to say, hey, let's throw a party. This time will be different.
How it's putting a damper on plans for a public celebration of Canucks playoff hockey.
You're watching Global BC. This is Global News Hour at 6.
Good evening. Thanks very much for joining us. Sophie is off tonight. There is still no arrest in a murder and stabbing along the White Rock waterfront this week. As Global's Janet Brown reports, there are noticeably fewer people walking along the promenade, and businesses are hurting because people are scared.
The gray rainy day is reflective of the atmosphere of the community. After two stabbings this week, one fatal.
Random attack from behind, two guys getting knifed in the neck. We don't need any of that.
I walk here every day, and this place is usually very busy. You see all the same people every day. And look how deserted it is.
Three cancellations happened at lunchtime, and all evening reservations were canceled last night.
Yeah. Gus Rashid, who owns Five Kitchen and Oyster Bar on Marine Drive, says customers are scared and staying away.
Yesterday was one of the slowest days I ever encountered. We might as well be closed. People are scared, and I don't blame them.
The first stabbing happened Sunday night. Jatinder Singh was sitting on a bench with his wife near the pier when he was slashed in the neck. The second attack happened Tuesday night. Kulwinder Sohi died from his injuries.
I can tell you that police are throwing a significant amount of resources at this. They are confident that they will catch the individual.
While the suspect description in both attacks is the same, a black male, 5'11", wearing a hat and gray hoodie, the Integrated Homicide Investigation Team says, at this time, IHIT has not confirmed nor ruled out the possibility that the same person committed both the incident on April 21st and the homicide on April 23rd.
The same clothing, same height, same stature, and how he attacked from behind, exactly how they two were sitting and this couple was sitting. So they know for a fact, we know for a fact it's the same person.
Singh's relative, who doesn't want her identity revealed, says he and his wife are devastated after hearing about the fatal stabbing.
They're traumatized, both of them, not doing good at all. The wife had a mental breakdown this morning. She cried and cried thinking that this could have been very well him.
And she says the couple, only in Canada 2 months, is thinking about moving back home to India. Janet Brown, Global News.
And there is some welcome relief today for the man who survived the stabbing in White Rock on Sunday. Jatinder Singh and his family arrived in Canada, as you heard, from India 2 months ago, but realized the medical insurance from their home country had expired. The BC Health Ministry now says his provincial health coverage has been backdated to April 1st, meaning his medical treatment will be covered. Because of his situation, the medical services plan has waived Singh's waiting period for eligibility. More anger and frustration with our so-called catch-and-release justice system, sparked by the case of an alleged repeat offender. As Kylie Stanton reports, the traumatized victim of a violent carjacking is asking why the suspect was back on the streets the next day.
Opened my car door and then I tried to stop him, so I was like, hey, what are you doing? Get out.
Seth Packer did not get out of the car, but after strike one, strike two, and strike three, he did get out of jail.
He was released into the community, and it's unfortunate, but the decision isn't up to the police.
This was after Packer's second carjacking in as many days, at which point he had already racked up a list of charges. According to the BC Prosecution Service, he was under strict bail conditions, including house arrest, only allowed to be outside his residence between the hours of noon and 2 p.m., or for very specific reasons, such as attending court.
Only to then break and enter into somebody's home, steal their wallet, and attempt to conduct another carjacking.
Packer was arrested a third time, here in the 1900 block of Richardson Street, Tuesday night. Three incidents in three consecutive days. A total of 9 charges.
I'm just so disappointed in the system, really.
His victims left in disbelief.
That was one criminal. I mean, how many other criminals are being caught and released every day?
That same question now being fired at the government.
When will this premier do the right thing? Admit that his soft-on-crime policies are causing chaos across British Columbia?
We're always watching for changes that need to be made. We have made some pretty key interventions into the system that are showing results in terms of if that person is causing harm, they're detained and their Crown Council is more successful in that detention, or it's removing their harm from the street.
Still, there is criteria that needs to be followed. And while strengthening bail laws is on the table for all levels of government, police say incidents like this one highlight the need for a more robust criminal justice system.
We need to have stronger deterrence and consequences for individuals who repeatedly are causing harm in our communities.
Packer is now in custody, where he will remain until his next court appearance, scheduled for May 14th. Kylie Stanton, Global News.
Still the middle of spring, and already BC is dealing with a number of wildfires. Thankfully, there is some relief as one of the first evacuation orders in the North Central Interior has been lifted. Aaron MacArthur has the latest on what's shaping up to be a challenging BC wildfire season.
Standing around watching it.
Flames were first spotted around 4 Wednesday afternoon. The suspected human-caused fire, fueled by strong afternoon winds, quickly spread to about half a square kilometer. The fire burning close enough to homes near Chetwynd that officials issued a tactical evacuation order. The regional district says no structures have been destroyed. By Thursday morning, conditions improved significantly and the evacuation order was downgraded.
We're immensely relieved that all our residents were able to return home today. It's a very stressful time.
On Thursday, crews were still actively working this fire. Helicopters assisting 25 ground personnel trying to gain control. Traffic on Highway 97 was moving Thursday, but thick smoke required single-lane travel only with a pilot vehicle. The Prince George Fire Center says the conditions in the piece this spring are potentially volatile. Drought has left the landscape ripe for any spark to be dangerous.
We've been experiencing some pretty persistent drought since the fall of 2022. So not only is it, you know, the normal time of year where we see grass fires in the Peace region, that's compounded with a lot of dry fuel.
Around the province, the situation much the same. Dry ground and spring winds, a dangerous combination. By May 3rd, the Cariboo, Prince George, and Kamloops fire centers will all have partial burn bans in place, trying to prevent human-caused fires. The provincial government promising the needed resources will be in place earlier than typical to help fight what is expected to be a long season.
We are prepared for an early start. We had hoped that there wouldn't be one, but we are well prepared for that. That's some of the takeaway that we learned from last season, which was the worst season in the history of the province.
The Chetwynd fire, one of three burning in BC Thursday, still considered out of control. Aaron MacArthur, Global News.
Well, it's been a long time coming, but today marks a major milestone for the severely delayed Little Mountain social housing development in Vancouver. Travis Prasad joins us with more on the positive step forward, providing hope for people looking for affordable housing. Travis.
Chris, for a very, very long time now, this lot here has been nothing more than just open land. If you didn't know any better, you'd think it's part of the park and baseball diamonds just across the street here. But behind this land is a very lengthy story, and the city claims it's now entering a new chapter.
Golden shovels in the ground at the Little Mountain Lands. It's understandable if you don't remember the details of this development. It's been a while, over 16 years.
This project here has a long and checkered past. Let's just call it what it is.
But now this hole in the ground is set to become a six-story building with 48 units of city-owned social housing, a neighborhood house, 69-space daycare, and public plaza.
Proof of what can be achieved when governments and home builders work together to remove barriers that prevent the delivery of needed housing.
The city says all these years, Holborn could not secure financing for the project. because of the contract requirement to build social housing before the 1,400 market condos planned for the 6.2-hectare lot. But that changed last fall when the city lifted its occupancy permit holds on the condos, meaning Holborn could get the financing and get started.
We're going to really work hard to make sure that happens, hit those deadlines.
Former BC NDP MLA David Chudnovsky advocated for some 224 families evicted from their affordable rentals on the land in 2007, with a promise they'd be rehoused there before the 2010 Olympics.
I think it's in terribly bad taste to have the celebration. Should have been an apology from the mayor.
If it makes it any better, yeah, I would apologize for how it's taken so long. It was never the intention. It's a very long backstory of why we're here, why it's taken so long, but I don't think we need to go there.
In 2008, the BC Liberal government of the time sold the Little Mountain lands to Holborn for $334 million and gave the developer a $211 million loan interest-free till the end of 2026, with no construction deadlines.
No doubt that this is a developer who got a sweetheart deal. It's a reminder that giving public lands to private interests without any checks and balances was bound to be a disastrous policy, and we're seeing it play out here front and center.
Construction of the social housing building is expected to be completed in the late spring of 2026.
Now, it's important to note that completion date is only for the one building. There's still two other social housing projects to be completed. And when it comes to those market condos, there's no timeline for completion on those. So this story, while it's been dragging on for many years, is still very far from over. Chris.
Sounds like it. Travis, thanks very much. TransLink's money issues are driving it to the edge of a fiscal cliff. That is the warning today from CEO Kevin Quinn, who says time is quickly running out to secure long-term funding. As Richard Zussman reports, Quinn wants Victoria and Ottawa to step up.
It's the last stop, Mayor's Council telling the federal government to get on board.
As much as we congratulate and appreciate the province for stepping up, we know that the absence of a very important player in all of this, the federal government.
On Thursday, mayors across Metro Vancouver approving a new investment plan. It includes increasing service on 60 bus routes to address overcrowding, extending evening hours on 11 routes, increasing Canada Line frequencies, and enhancing late evening Handy Dart service. But what it doesn't include is long-term funding from Ottawa.
By the end of next year, we hit a fiscal cliff. And the stark reality is that without additional funding, we won't have enough revenues to cover the costs of keeping the current system running, let alone funding much needed expansion.
For example, right now, one third of all buses in Surrey, Langley, and Vancouver are overcrowded at peak times. TransLink struggling to keep up with demand and rising costs. And with this fiscal plan approved, gears now shift to find sustainable funding from Ottawa and Victoria. Without it, TransLink will be hit by a speed bump.
You've talked about a significant reduction in service and cuts. I think we need to begin to provide greater detail of what that would look like.
The province is trying to avoid whatever those service cuts may be. Just last week, Victoria came to the table with $300 million in funding, but that does not factor in population growth and investment funds beyond this year.
I hope that the provincial government, whoever that provincial government is, will be a partner in that.
Maybe my disappointment with the federal government is that we were working together on making sure that TransLink got through the pandemic, but we also recognized that it was important to be there for the recovery as well. We're there for the recovery.
Meaning the federal government has not been, making it hard to keep TransLink financial books on track. Richard Zussman, Global News, Victoria.
And if you have to drive instead, you may have noticed gas prices are surging in BC as refineries make the switch to a more expensive summer blend. Experts predict prices are only going to get higher in the days ahead, renewing the debate about whether making the switch to electric is worth it or not. Andrea McPherson reports.
If you didn't have the opportunity to gas up yesterday, it's going to cost you roughly 9 cents per liter more to do so today, with prices now around 210 to 212.9 cents per liter in Metro Vancouver.
It is what it is. I have to get to work.
Sentiment shared by many is petroleum analyst Dan McTagg claims the rise is largely due to companies switching to a more costly summer blend, which generally sticks around until mid-September. Another factor is the price of U.S. gas going up 10 cents per gallon yesterday. He also says if you think today's prices are shocking, just wait until tomorrow.
I don't have very good things to say about the price of fuel. It's shocking, but if that weren't enough, you may want to fill up today, because tonight the price of gas will be heading up yet another 6 cents a liter. You're going to see a lot of stations selling gasoline this time tomorrow for 217.9. Maybe some will offer you a penny's discount at 216.9. Some may actually push it up to 218.9.
And it seems there's little relief in sight, with McTagg telling Global News just last month he expects prices to hit 220 or even 230 per liter this summer.
So it hasn't hit me that hard yet, but I can totally understand how it's hitting the economy in general.
It doesn't help, of course, that you have a jurisdiction here in Vancouver, which is the highest taxed anywhere in North America. So I don't know, get busy buying EVs. I don't say that flippantly, but that's apparently what the government wants. And it's the government's getting its wish. If you want high prices and you want boutique gasoline, then you have to be prepared for it. There are consequences for those kind of regulations.
But are those EVs realistic for all?
I did just send my mom a link to an electric car, so maybe that's the way we're going to head.
Would you consider switching because of this, you think?
Maybe not because of this, but like, it just seems like, I mean, this is a 95 car that I'm driving right now, so she's probably on her last legs anyways, and it seems like just a smart choice moving forward to like go electric or hybrid at least.
EVs are still more expensive to purchase compared to gas-powered vehicles, pricing many motorists out of the market. And despite provincial and federal government targets of having only zero-emission vehicles being sold by 2035, several challenges still remain. Andrea McPherson, Global News.
Canucks fans have playoff fever, but so far the city isn't willing to push the party to the next level.
This situation is different from Olympics. It will be different from the World Cup.
How the violence and chaos of 2011 are influencing the decision to deny an outdoor public viewing party. Will Vancouver ever shake the No Fun City label? Next on the NewsHour. Humbling thieves get a big dose of karma in Nanaimo. How it actually benefited the story they stole from, coming up later. Plus,
just to know that what we're doing is benefiting so many people in so many ways.
The BC Volunteers behind a major effort to ship desperately needed medical supplies all around the world. But first, Vancouver Mayor Ken Sim has promised to shed the No Fun City label, but it's proving more difficult than he might have expected. There are still no plans in place for an outdoor Canucks playoff viewing party as the team gets set for Game 3 in Nashville tomorrow. Alyssa Thibault joins us from outside Rogers Arena tonight. Alyssa, the mayor seemed to throw cold water on the idea today.
He did, Chris. Ken Sim basically confirming that Vancouver is still living the consequences of its own history. Two riots here in 30 years, and it seems the city is determined to remove any chance of one happening again, even if this is the first time in years the Canucks have had a playoff run.
They've happened in Toronto and Edmonton, but an outdoor viewing party won't be happening in the city of Vancouver, even with Mayor Ken Sim, who's promised to get rid of the No Fun City reputation.
I think the city realizes that I really like to have a good party as well, personally. And, you know, as Mayor of Vancouver, we have to be incredibly responsible and thoughtful.
Sim points to the city's history of rioting at the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs, both in 2011 and in 1994.
We're not just going to say, hey, let's throw a party. This time will be different, because what we learned in the past was that's what they thought in 2011.
So this season, outdoor public events are off the table.
It's a bummer, but totally understandable to prevent what happened last time.
It's a bit uptight. Let them have their fun.
The mayor says he's taking advice from experts, including the VPD.
We will offer our insight and our opinion from a public safety perspective. We're not going to get into the confidential details.
Still, other cities can handle it.
Why not do it? I think that's the better question.
The mayor of Port Coquitlam says his city will be holding a viewing party for every Canucks playoff game.
I just don't think we should let, the 1% of bozos who do stupid things ruin it for everyone else.
BC Place tells Global News the stadium would support opportunities to engage the community. Even the tourism minister is on board.
We see that working really well at BC Place for the BC Lions, and so it's already been established that people know how to have fun right there. It's a great spot.
But the decision lies with City Hall.
I understand the decision, but I don't think it's necessarily needed.
I'm not overly upset because I understand the reasoning behind it.
I think that's a bit ridiculous myself.
Now, Canucks fans have been very well behaved up to this point, even getting praise from the Vancouver police, but we've only had two games. There is still a long way to go in this playoff season. Chris?
Sure is. Lots of hockey ahead. Thank you, Alyssa. Coming up, more trouble for a controversial construction project.
His life has been cut short, and I think it's been cut short by the stress and the trauma of having been displaced.
The death of a prominent resident forced from his home and how his family believes it contributed to his death. But first, seniors fight to preserve their fixed incomes, pushing to defer payment of service fees they say are unfair. Many Canadians continue to struggle with affordability, especially seniors on fixed incomes. Some seniors say deferring their property taxes makes it easier, and they'd like to defer other fees too. So for more, let's bring in Consumer Matters' Anne Drua. Anne?
Thanks, Chris. BC Seniors Advocate is currently touring the province and tells Consumer Matters many seniors are hurting financially. Some are losing their homes, and more seniors are using the food bank. Dan Levitt says his office would like to see the current property tax deferral program expanded to include municipal fees. It's a move advocates have been pushing the province on for some time.
When Jerry Spitz saw an increase in his sewer bill, he says it was another hit in the pocketbook.
When that bill comes in, you've got to really scramble to come up with the cash.
The Coquitlam senior is on a fixed income and defers his property taxes. Like most municipalities in BC, sewer, water, and garbage disposal fees are not included in Jerry's city property taxes, which means he can't defer them.
It's very difficult when you're living on a fixed pension. You have to decide whether you're going to use money from your medicine budget or your food budget or some other budget.
The property tax deferral program is a provincial program and available to qualifying BC homeowners 55 years or older. It allows homeowners to defer all or some of their annual property taxes. BC's seniors advocate Dan Levitt says he would like to see that program expanded to include other fees, especially when you consider the average property tax in BC is approximately $4,700 a year.
To include things like strata fees, to include your hydro costs, your heating costs, gas, we want to see it include all those municipal charges, sewage, waste disposal, and water. All those things should be wrapped together in the property tax deferral program.
So far, BC Seniors Advocate says he hasn't heard directly from the province about expanding the program, even though it was recommended in a 2022 report. Consumer Matters reached out to the province for answers. The Ministry of Municipal Affairs stating at this time user fees may not be deferred and went on to say, we encourage municipalities to provide flexible payment schedules for user fees to help residents. While the Ministry of Finance stated in part, municipalities have the ability to choose to fund certain services through property taxes or through utility service fees, such as service fees for water, sewer, and garbage. Still, that's of no help to seniors like Jerry, who would like to see more support.
You work your whole life to buy a house, and then they come up with schemes that can tax you right out of it again and put you into the homeless category.
The Ministry of Finance also told Consumer Matters utility service fees are not eligible for the property tax deferral program because they are not considered a property tax under the Land Tax Deferment Act. But some cities like Coquitlam told us if the province decided to expand the property tax deferral program to include utility fees, Coquitlam would be happy to support any owners who might choose to participate in the program. And if you have a consumer issue for me, you can email me at consumermatters@globalnews.ca.
All right. Good information. Thanks very much, Ann. The family of a Kelowna man forced to evacuate his apartment due to safety concerns caused by construction of the UBC Okanagan Tower is grieving tonight. He passed away, surprisingly, shortly after a bad fall. And as Jaden Wozni reports, his sister blames his death on the displacement.
His life has been cut short, and I think it's been cut short by the stress and the trauma of having been displaced.
Sue Bowman's brother Jim was among the 84 residents forced to evacuate from Hadgraft Wilson Place on April 1st due to the damage the building sustained, believed to be a result of the construction of the new UBC Okanagan Tower.
Which caused him a great deal of anxiety, a bit of depression, as I'm sure it did for all the tenants. And he started wandering a lot. In fact, the RCMP found him one night standing right outside Hadgraft Wilson Place with his groceries at midnight.
Like many of the residents here, Jim had been living at a hotel for close to a month. This past Sunday, his sister says he suffered a bad fall and fractured his tibia. He was scheduled to have surgery on April 23rd, but suddenly passed away.
The way we need to look at it, it was just simply too much for his body to accept the pain and the discomfort.
Bowman says while she doesn't blame UBC Okanagan directly for her brother's passing, she can't help but feel this wouldn't have happened had he been home. But the university has yet to publicly take responsibility for the displacement of the residents, and Bowman has a strong message for the institution.
Quite frankly, I think you had a moral responsibility. You've denied responsibility, and in doing that, you've taken a moral stand that you won't support the people in your community. And that is, in fact, disgraceful to me.
In a statement, the university's principal and deputy vice chancellor says, "I was deeply saddened to learn of Jim Hadgraft's passing. As a family namesake and center of the community at Hadgraft Wilson Place, we know Jim will be remembered for the kindness and care that he showed to everyone around him. I have offered my condolences and those of UBC Okanagan on behalf of students, faculty, and staff to his family at this challenging time." Flowers and posters have been hung up along the fence outside Hadgraft Wilson Place by his neighbors and those who were closest to him. One poster reads, "In loving memory of Jim Hadgraft, our friend, brother, and neighbor, we will continue to fight for our homes. Rest in peace." Jaden Wozni, Global News, Kelowna.
Just ahead, surviving addiction.
I reached out for help. I didn't get the help that I needed.
A former addict shares her eventual path to sobriety and how it can work for others, too. Plus,
I went and looked at my video cameras to see what transpired.
Video of bumbling thieves goes viral with a surprising positive impact on the store that shared it. Thieves aren't always the sharpest, and that's especially true of this pair caught on camera in Nanaimo. A bit of instant karma for these two. One does a face plant trying to steal the sign at NYLA Fresh Thread clothing store. The sign weighs about 45 kilograms. Store owner Leon Dravetsky says staff only noticed it missing when the Nanaimo Port Authority reported they found it. That's when he checked the security video and saw what the thieves had done. Surprisingly, it's actually been good for business.
Our online store has picked up quite a bit since then, and we've seen lots more foot traffic in the store too, so it's definitely helping us on the backside. We're famous for our heritage t-shirts, so we might do a heritage t-shirt with these two guys stealing our sign. Might be quite funny.
Dravetsky says he hasn't seen anything like this in his decade in business. The video has already racked up more than 1 million views on social media. With the ongoing debate over safe supply and drug decriminalization, we have the story of a recovering addict who says she's an example of how the right treatment can work. John Waugh has more.
Every siren is a deafening reminder
that thousands of British Columbians continue to die each year. 8 years after the toxic drug crisis was declared a public health emergency, amidst this stark reality, slivers of light and stories of survival.
Somebody will offer you drugs, and it's a quick and easy alternative to being hungry, to being cold, to being afraid.
Heather says she was only a child when she first learned to cover up the realities of addiction.
I asked my parents, are you guys on drugs? And then they were like, yes, but don't tell your brother and sister.
A runaway at only 14 meant living in and out of homelessness, first on Granville Street, then the downtown East Side. 2 decades of trauma, addiction, and exploitation.
At one point, I ended up working in the sex trade, underage sex trade, just to be able to survive.
A common misconception, addicts can't be helped because they don't want to get clean.
I knew that when I needed help and I asked for help and I reached out for help, I didn't get the help that I needed.
Her story highlights the failure to prioritize treatment as one of the 4 pillars of Canada's drug strategy.
There are a lot of barriers for people who are trying to address their addiction.
As the debate rages on about harm reduction and decriminalization,
ending this program won't save a single life.
There is no doubt treatment will.
Every single time there's one more bed available, that's one more life that can be saved.
We have built out our system by close to 600 beds in the last number of years.
Heather tried several times to get into treatment before finding help at the Union Gospel Mission 2.5 years ago.
I feel like the hard work was surviving to get to the point where I could make it in here.
Now, the unique thing about this building is for women going through the treatment journey, it literally all happens in-house. The first level is dedicated to resourcing. The next 2 levels for recovery. When women are ready to move into transitional housing units, that's the next 3 floors. And the top level is a daycare center for women living here with their children.
It's not a band-aid that you can slap on and say, like, okay, you're feeling better. Like, you haven't used drugs in 30 days, so you're good to go.
UGM's model provides treatment and transition, often spanning 5 or more years. A bold and long commitment that requires government support and funding.
I always believed that I would be able to do it if I had a safe environment.
First safety, now years of sobriety. But without a larger focus on treatment, Heather says her story remains the exception to the deadly rule. John Hua, Global News.
Just ahead, relief is coming for Princeton residents, eventually under a boil water advisory since the atmospheric river of 2021, when the clean water could flow again. And coming up in sports, Whitecaps versus Wrexham FC and how the marquee matchup came to be. Princeton residents have been under a boil water advisory for more than 2 years, but relief might be in sight. The town has been dealing with a compromised water system since the 2021 atmospheric river flooding, but they finally have a timeline for when they might get back to normal. 2 wells have now been replaced, and the underground infrastructure is complete. The remaining steps involve installing mechanical and electrical systems.
I have to come to town to get my water.
There's not much you can do. Mother Nature caused it. It wasn't anybody's fault. Who would ever think you'd get 300 mils of rain in a few days?
The town says it hopes to have the system back up and running in August or September. Replacing Princeton's water system will cost more than $4 million. Lots of rain we've had in the last 24 hours, and more is coming, but with breaks. And I'll let Christy give you all the details now in the weather forecast. Christy?
Thanks. I know that the rain is getting people down a little bit. I had so many people talking to me about it today, so I thought I would start off with this photo. Listen, the key over the next little while is that when you get a break in the rain, you got to get out and use it because there won't be very many of them. But it is good news. We need the moisture. This is the scene out there today, and it was cool as well. Here's a look at what we're expecting. So overnight tonight, we'll continue with rainfall. The morning hours as well, we're expecting another 5 to 15 millimeters of rain. The dry patch over the next little while will be be tomorrow afternoon. So this is in the morning. You can still see some rainfall, certainly Kamloops South, Revelstoke South, and we are still expecting snow on the mountain passes for those summits. So keep that in mind. Tomorrow afternoon, things start to lighten up. That's the drier patch that I'm meaning for the South Coast area. Those of you in the interior will be drier as well, but a slight chance of showers and even a risk of thunderstorms for you. And then on Saturday, we're right back into it. So the key is late tomorrow, that's when you can expect a little bit of a break in the action. The long range forecast is still looking like this. So a heads up, it's not until any next weekend that we could see a more prolonged break. Nice conditions though across northern BC. This isn't all across the province, although northern regions really could use the moisture right now, and they will get some. It's just mainly focused on the southern BC region for the next 24 hours. So 14 degrees is a daytime high and staying cool as we head into the weekend. Rain on and off over the next little while. So let's use or have a look at something beautiful and colorful and bright. Carolyn sent us this photo from Harrison Tulip Festival. We've been talking a lot about the Abbotsford Tulip Festival, but this one's happening as well. 35 acres, beautiful colors there with the background as well. Chris, back to you.
Rainbow fields these days, too. Thanks very much, Christy. All right, here's Squire with a look ahead to sports, and a legendary voice in sports has gone silent.
Yeah, sad news today. Bob Cole died at the age of 90. Of course, he was the soundtrack for so many great hockey moments. Bob is one of the guys, or a kind of guy, who could make icing sound exciting. Here's one of my favorite Bob Cole calls. You may have heard this a few times, but it's still worth watching one more time.
Here's Lemieux. The center penalty coming up. Look at Lemieux. Oh, my heavens. What a goal. What a move. Lemieux. Oh, baby.
Oh, baby, indeed.
Things that we don't really consider that valuable, but they do over there.
Also tonight, a major operation getting medical equipment to countries in need. The volunteer team making it happen. Later. We're in the tweener zone between game 2 and 3.
Three is tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But we'll go back to 2 because game 2 was an example of will over skill. The Canucks have more individual talent than Nashville does, but that didn't matter in game number 2. The Predators were willing to get in front of every Canuck shot they could, and Vancouver didn't find ways around that. But Rick Tocchet says there are ways to beat that kind of no pain, no gain way of defending.
Nashville's will to defend were better than our will to score. Let's face it. So I think there's positions and plays there, but it's really a will. I mean, if you're, you know, there's areas to go with a heavy stick and there's plays there. Just find them. And that's, you know, getting through people and fighting through. More second stick type of shots. Try to look for sticks instead of, you know, around bodies. And tee it up. You know, if guys want to block it, it's got to hurt. So I wouldn't turn down a shot if a guy's going to be right in front of me. So, we're going to tee it up tomorrow.
That's true. Get enough bruises on your body and you might be reluctant to block more shots. Ryan Reynolds is bringing his soccer team to Vancouver this summer to play against a team he cheered for while he was growing up here. Wrexham AFC and the Whitecaps will play an exhibition game on July 27th at BC Place. It's going to draw a good crowd. And it was an idea the Whitecaps pursued. That is according to team boss Axel Schuster, who spoke to us from a moving taxi cab or Uber in New York City.
And I have to say, we approached them because we really wanted to bring this team to Vancouver. We wanted to bring Ryan Reynolds to Vancouver because I think it didn't felt right that they are coming the second time to North America, and he is the face of the franchise, and the team is not coming to Canada and not to his hometown. So I think that was behind it, and that was the driver, and everything else then we got sorted out and will get sorted out until we start to play this game.
Fencer Nicholas Zhang is going to represent Canada at this year's Olympics in Paris. He's going there ranked 35th in the world, and that's a ranking that's bound to get better because Zhang is only 17 years old. In fact, he is the youngest of the top 35 in the world in Epi.
Nicholas Zhang is known for his speed and quick strike ability in the sport of fencing, and his rise up the ranks has been just as swift.
I've always had big dreams for what I could do as a fencer,
but never in this short of a timeline, you know?
He's beat, in the last 2 years, former Olympic medalist, world champions, as a 16-year-old. People were calling me all year, like, who is this kid? Like, we've never seen anything like this.
This kid is now 17, started fencing when he was 7, but it really took off for him when he moved from Richmond to the North Shore to train full-time at Sentinel Secondary and their fencing academy. The COVID shutdown actually proved to be a turning point for him.
COVID was the downfall of a lot of people's careers. But for me, I trained a lot during that time. When everything was shut down, we had nothing to do, so I was just training.
Keep your tip sharp and then strong in. Let's try that.
Zhang has the skills, but his work ethic and fearlessness has really set him apart. At 17, he is typically facing opponents at world-class meets who are 10 or even 20 years older than him.
There's like memes on social media about him, like he's like a highlight reel because he's not scared to do it. When you're a bit older, you start getting scared to do the flashy dangles, and I don't know, maybe it's because of the school Sentinel, you know, Connor Bedard used to go there. They were, I think, classmates, or they're a year apart, so maybe that's the thing about the water at Sentinel, but to have these unique kids.
You know you're doing something right when you're mentioned in the same breath as Connor Bedard, but there are similarities. The drive and the focus are world class.
Yeah, when we fence, like, there's a lot of like people watching, coaches are yelling, and there's a lot of noise. But for me, like, I don't hear any of the noise. Like everything, like, it becomes like silent almost. Like I just hear what I want to do, what actions I need to do.
Get close to Paris!
He is not going to Paris to participate. I truly believe that anything can happen the day of.
Barry DeLay, Global Sports.
Is there betting on fencing? It seems like he'd be a good bet.
Yeah, well, he'd be, and he would still have good odds because there's a lot of people who think the older guys would beat him. You never know.
All right, thanks, Squire. Just ahead, medical surplus gets a second life abroad, saving lives thanks to a team of BC volunteers. That's next.
This is BC with Jay Durant, is brought to you by JM Media.
Jordan Armstrong's on the desk tonight, and he's here with a preview of what's coming up on Global News at 11. Jordan?
Chris, a section of a major route through New Westminster will remain closed longer than anticipated. Columbia Street has been shut down between McBride Boulevard and Elliott Street since April 2nd, so crews can lift steel girders for the new Patello Bridge. It was supposed to reopen in a few days, but the closure has been extended until late May, and some local businesses and at least one city councilor are not happy. We'll hear from them tonight on Global News at 11. Chris?
We'll watch for that. Thanks very much, Jordan. Surplus medical equipment from BC is being shipped around the world thanks to the hard work of a group of dedicated BC volunteers. Equipment like wheelchairs, walkers, even beds considered obsolete here is being repurposed in countries like Ukraine, where resources are scarce. Jay Durant shows us more in This is BC.
This is orthopedic supplies.
Moving day for all kinds of donated medical equipment.
300 to 400 items, lots of beds and mattresses, power scooters, lots of wheelchairs, walkers, canes, crutches.
A huge undertaking, but routine work now for the volunteers at Rotary World Help.
We're pretty fine-tuned. We've been doing it for 27 years.
This is the anesthesia cart from Burnaby.
This is fully functional equipment that's passed its cycle at BC hospitals and care homes, but much needed in so many countries around the world.
We've had physicians who said we operate in a situation where they're using a flashlight for their light.
We sent containers to Ukraine since the war started, and we got a picture back of a 12-year-old girl, and she was on a dialysis machine that we had sent to them.
It's been a life-saving event for hundreds, thousands of soldiers and civilians who have been injured.
Bring those beds.
It's a lot of work, but an incredibly rewarding endeavor for the hundreds of volunteers who over the years have managed to send 460 shipping containers to 61 countries.
That's a really big difference because
before they were lying down on the floor. Now they have comfortable bed.
Straight in, that's good.
We get people who rush up to us and put their arms around and say, we're so grateful for what you give us. And it's a very emotional time.
It's a great project, so we find a way to make it happen. Bottom line is helping people in need throughout the world.
Jay Durant, Global News.
Love that guy's T-shirt. And don't forget to email your ideas to Jay at thisisbc@globalnews.ca. Okay, we've got 30 seconds to wrap it up. Stay dry out there, but take advantage of the breaks when you get them. Right, Christy?
That's the name of the game over the next little while. So the break that we're expecting is in the afternoon tomorrow, sort of late afternoon. Should be drier, still mainly cloudy, but that's your break because rain comes back in for our Saturday.
All right. Thanks very much. Thank you for watching, everybody. Hope you have a great night. We'll see you back here for the News Hour tomorrow.